all owe them, but very few of us know them. They took an oath to protect us at home and abroad, so the rest of us can live safe and free. They are the men and women of our military and first responder communities, and these are their stories. American Warrior Radio is on the air.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. You're tuned to American Warrior Radio. This is your host, Ben Bueller Garcia. A very special welcome to listeners in Colorado Springs on our newest affiliate, KRDO News Radio. We're debuting on KRDO this weekend thanks to our presenting sponsors in the Springs, Colonel Rich Lewis and Pam Barron of Medicare Mentors. The Medicare maze can be a challenge for everyone, but especially so for veterans and their spouses who have to weigh how Medicare works with their VA health care or TRICARE for life. No matter where you are, Medicare Mentors can be your advocate and resource. If you have questions about your benefits or just need a health care checkup, they can be reached at 719-339-1835 or visit MedicareMentorsLLC.com. Here at American Warrior Radio, we tell the stories of those who serve in our military and the first responders who protect us on the home front. We also like to check in with veterans who have made the transition and found success in the civilian world. Our guest today hits all three of those points. He served as a Green Beret medic, he was a firefighter, and is now making his way in Hollywood. You may have already seen him on the big screen in films like Vice or on your television in the series SEAL Team or Ray Donovan. Jeff Bosley is also the perfect guest for our Colorado Springs debut because he's a Colorado native and spent some time at Fort Carson during his service in the U.S. Army. Jeff, welcome to American Warrior Radio.
Good afternoon, sir. Thank you for having me. It's a huge, huge honor.
Oh, get out of here.
No, it is. It's an amazing show, and you threw it into Colorado Springs. I can't, that's two for two right there.
Well, you know, you'd been bugging us to come on the show, Jeff, for what, like 6 years now, and I kept telling you, wait till we get Colorado Springs.
I'm pretty relentless on that social media. You know, I just kept bothering you.
Well, that's a joke, folks. We reached out to Jeff because we really wanted him on the show. Jeff, you've had, I don't know what phrase is appropriate, maybe a twisted and tortured resume. But
that's probably the more politically correct answer.
Yeah. But much of what you've done seems to have a tie back to, you know, maybe some inspiration from your father, who was an emergency room physician there in Colorado. As I understand, Jeff, that's why when you decided to go to college, you started off studying pre-med?
Yeah, I mean, it was one of those things. I was very fortunate. My father just recently retired as an emergency room physician, and I was fortunate in, even though his generation typically was the generation to kind of heavily imply, you know, hey, son, you better do what I do. He wasn't really like that, which is good, but just because I was around it, that just kind of permeated my existence. He's a physician. Two out of his three other brothers are surgeons or physicians of some type. So I just was around it. And as a patient, I spent a lot of time in the emergency room. So it just kind of got to me. And so that was definitely something that influenced a lot of my decisions. So it just seemed like, well, I like medicine. Let's go to college and go to pre-med. That just kind of made sense.
Now, when did you pick up the acting bug? I've heard you mention, Jeff, that, you know, as a kid growing up, like a lot of us, you watched a lot of films and you wanted to be Rambo. Did that acting become of interest to you prior to college, or that's something you just...
Yeah, no, it absolutely was there. I think my parents, much to their humor at this point in my life, look back and aren't surprised now retrospectively. But I definitely, you know, just like any of us kids, we played, you know, I played with G.I. Joes, and I took pretend to whole new levels. You know, I was very much an emergency room physician's son in that I needed details. I loved details and elaborating on a universe. And, you know, I didn't just like pretend I was Maverick and Top Gun. I took a, you know, refrigerator box and I actually added wings to it, and I created working flaps and a joystick and windshield wipers, which doesn't make any sense. But so it was very much in my blood. But I never really got into it. I did, you know, school plays in grade school, which we kind of all, I think, to be honest with you, I think you have to. I don't think you ever get it. I don't think you have a choice. And then I dabbled in high school. And then I just kind of, like I said, I was raised around practicality. So it just, anything impractical just seemed to not be something I should do. it was just like an implied passive feeling. But in college, that's when I said, you know, I need some electives. I'm going to a liberal arts college in Washington at the time. And so I took a couple acting classes and absolutely fell in love with it. And then when I transferred to a college in Idaho, I went straight up double major, sports medicine and theater major, and definitely went to town on the theater major. I went all in for that.
Jeff, what inspired you to go ahead and become a real life Rambo? I mean, did the September 11th, was that kicking around the back of your brain or?
Yeah, unquestionably. You know, like I was raised around movies and watching all that stuff. And so there's definitely a weird dichotomy of how I was influenced, you know, through just entertainment and media. And so it kind of is no surprise how I've done what I've done. But because I was so deep in the theater major and all that, and I was getting older, I was in my late 20s, getting to be early, you know, almost 30 when 9/11 happened. And I got used to life and comfort and not, you know, I didn't want to be told what to do and all that. But then 9/11 did happen, and I still let it beat around me and just gnaw at my subconscious for a couple years even. And then finally, almost three, four years, and then finally I said, I have to do this before I get too old, because I know I will regret it for the rest of my life. And finally, I went right to the recruiter's office and then proposed to my, at the time, girlfriend the next day.
Good timing, brother.
It's kind of good timing, but I was in basic training while the wedding planning was happening. So, I mean, call that an accidental design.
Jeff, I tell you what, just being a relatively recent newlywed myself, I'd say you timed that even better. Thank you. Now, you always, Special Forces was on your radar. You clearly decided that's the route you want to go, but the Marines are out to lunch, I guess. Literally,
that was absolutely true. I went to the recruiter station. They all share like a little strip mall thing. My brother was at the time, he was still serving as a Marine. And I said, and I knew a couple of random people in my family had been Marines. So I just went to them because they just, you know, I like big, tough, you know, they're big, tough animals. And the door was literally locked. And so I said, I went next door. And while I was waiting, I came to the realization that in the Marines, you don't have a lot of say in your initial job. And I didn't like that. So while I was waiting in the Army waiting room, I said, okay, I'm glad this actually worked out. And then, yeah, I always knew I wanted to do something, whether it was Marine Force Recon, the SEAL route, or the Green Beret route. That was no other question. I didn't want to do anything else in the military.
Jeff, no disrespect, but at 28 years old, walking into a recruiter's office, you're kind of an old dude. I mean,
yeah.
And Green Beret is not easy. Green Beret medic is doubly not easy. Tell us about the X-ray program. I wasn't familiar with that.
It's come and gone. It has its inception. I think back in Vietnam, where they just needed to fill the ranks, because that's kind of where Green Berets unofficially kind of came into existence. And it's for lack of better terms, it's off the street. And that doesn't mean your training changes. It just means you don't typically have a career in the military before you try out. And over the years, that program has changed. It used to not exist. It came back into existence when they needed to fill the ranks. Some people love it. Some people hate it. I knew at my age, because you're right, going in older sucked. I knew at my age I wanted to streamline it, and my conscience was clear that I wasn't doing it because I was lazy or trying to cut corners. I knew whatever I had lost experience-wise not joining the infantry at 18, I knew I would be able to catch up, so to speak. And so it's basically you go straight into tryout to Special Forces. That's the abbreviated version, but that's essentially it. You still go to infantry basic training, and then you head off to airborne school, and then you go straight to Special Forces pre-training and tryouts, and God willing, you make it, and then you just keep on going through what we call the pipeline. So that's the X-ray program. And it's you know, there's two sides of the argument. For me, I still think somebody needs to be older to go into Special Forces and or have substantial military experience, because it's just something you can't make up. Mm-hmm. I believe there is a current age limit on the X-ray program. I don't think you can be 18 and do it. I think that's, you don't want an 18-year-old Green Beret. That'll take to the grave. But yeah, it was definitely harder. I mean, my drill sergeant basic training was I would venture to say at least 3 years my junior. My recruiter, I know, was younger than me. So it was always, but at the same time, because I got the game, so to speak. My best friend has been in the military his whole life. You know, he's a big infantry guy. You know, so I kind of got a little mental preparation. So I knew they were messing with me. So it was kind of nice because I didn't let it bother me as much.
Sure.
But yeah, my body was, you know, it already kind of got its damage from, you know, spending a life in my dad's emergency room. So
okay.
It was a little bit harder on the body for sure. I definitely did have to compensate with my mind.
But Jeff, when we come back, I want to talk a little bit more about your Green Beret. I'm not going to use the word career because unfortunately, maybe fortunately for folks that like movies, but unfortunately for the United States Army, it was a relatively short career. Folks, this is your host, Ben Buehler-Garcia. We're joined by Jeff Bosley. Jeff was, he's been a warrior, he's been a sheepdog, and now he's an actor. Stick around. You're going to want to hear the rest of the show. Welcome back to American Warrior Radio, ladies and gentlemen. This is your host, Ben Buehler-Garcia. We're joined by Jeff Bosley. Jeff hits it on all cylinders when it comes to American Warrior Radio. He's a former Green Beret medic. He's been a firefighter, and he's now making his way in probably maybe the roughest business. Well, I shouldn't say that. Being a Green Beret is pretty rough, too, but the roughest business there is, trying to make it in Hollywood. Jeff, welcome back. Now, your time in the Green Berets was relatively short. I want to say maybe 6 or 7 years.
Yeah, correct. Yeah, I didn't do the 20 years. I had got to a point where I could get to my reenlistment. I think I was at 6 or 7. Like I got out just around like a December, January switch. So, it was short by, you know, the 20-year comparison for sure.
And that was not intentional. You got injured and it was time to find a new line of work.
Yeah, it was. I mean, I kind of had the big, you know, come to whatever believers decision, thinking about it. And I really sat down, had to believe and think about how the wars were going. I'm by no means a warmonger, mm-hmm. but I liked doing my job because, you know, even though I was a medic, our job was a little, you know, well, like our motto says, is we help free the oppressed. And sometimes that's not all about hugs and courtesies. And things were getting just weird enough. I had started going through the south end of a divorce, and I just kind of, and my body was falling apart. And I was like, these things just added up to me going, all right, you know, I did what I needed to do, and let's just not reenlist this time around.
Now, you spent some time as a volunteer firefighter, as I understand it, while you were in college. Mm-hmm. So your next step on that twisted path, career path, was to go back to Colorado Springs and become a full-time firefighter. Not a bad decision based on the fact, and for our, you know, our new listeners in Colorado Springs, they'll remember this. There was a certain little incident on May 5th, 2014, at a little place called the Martin Drake Power Plant, a three-alarm fire there. How long had you been on the fire department when that kicked off?
Yeah, I had probably been in over a year and change at that point. I had just finished my probation period, and I was now what's through licensure called a firefighter too. So then I was pretty much serving at that point. You know, I was just working as a firefighter. So, yeah. It was, because when I was in college, I did it as a volunteer. And actually, ironically, I actually went to the fire academy while out processing the military. So there was a handful of months where it was like Ferris Bueller's Day Off. It was a lot of shenanigans to pull off both. But, I was at the time of that fire, I was at Firehouse 1 downtown. And anybody listening, I was in the calendar, and I got a wrath of crud for that my entire career. So to anybody at CSFD, hello.
Well, all of a sudden I think the phone lines in Colorado Springs are lighting up looking for that calendar. Now that this was, and I mentioned that fire specifically because this plant, Jeff, provided about 30% of the power to the city of Colorado Springs. And your truck company, and I tell you, I paid for college fighting forest fires, and
that's no joke.
Well, send me into 10,000 Acres of Blaze, not a problem. Send me into a burning building, you guys have got to be completely nuts. So,
yeah.
And especially so, if anybody knows anything about law enforcement, first responders, the Medal of Valor is a big deal, particularly for firefighters. And your truck company was awarded the Medal of Valor for your actions that day on the power plant.
Yeah, I think it was really happenstance, as I feel. I mean, yeah, because that plant, I mean, it sounds, there is a movie, ironically, going back to movies, there's a movie, it's called, I think, Ladder 49, where it's that giant of a property where there's just a lot of danger, and a lot of people don't understand with firefighting. Is sometimes, like, especially on the news, you'll see the firefighters just kind of standing around, you know, it looks like they're not saving it. Where in reality, there's sometimes where a fire just can't be saved and they just got to keep it from spreading.
Mm-hmm.
And that is such a giant property. And since it is that power plant, there's actually stuff aerosolized in the air that was basically just aerosolized fuel. And so, I mean, we were actually opening the garage door and as the door opened, you could see the plume of smoke. I mean, 'cause it was right in our eye line. Because we were so close, so we got there the fastest, just because of, you know, proximity, and we were the first ones in. And the inception of wherever the Medal of Valor decision was made, unquestionably goes to the captain and the seniors on that crew, because they're the ones that they were the first ones, literally on the scene to assess: are we going to save the property? Are we looking for lives? Are we looking for lives nearby? And they had to, you know, there's a handful of assessments that officer on duty has to make. And a part of that assessment was going in and checking it out. And I won't lie. Yeah. Like running into a burning building, as cliche as it is obviously against your instincts, but for some reason, I'm not like a daredevil. There was still something, so it's obviously a huge chemical dump of adrenaline. But there is something about that, even now just retelling the story, that I just long for, which is messed up in EMS and first responder world, because for you to do your job and enjoy it, nine times out of 10, that means something's going wrong for somebody else. So it's an unfortunate job to have.
Right.
But it was, yeah, that officer ran the show and we went in, and I'm the big giant guy and also the newer guy on the crew. So we were there just hustling in. The weight of those hoses loaded with water while you're breathing, while your adrenaline's going, you're breathing in oxygen, you're wearing all that heavy turnout gear. To date, there's no workout that reminds me of that moment. I was at the bottom of the stairs feeding that hose where I've never felt my lungs, even counting my Green Beret career, where I thought my lungs were going to not make it through the day.
Wow. Well, yeah, I tell you, we host, I'm part of a group that does a Memorial 9/11 Tower Challenge, and we have folks climb the 2,071 steps to replicate the Twin Towers, Jeff.
Yeah.
And I see, we have firefighters that do it in their full turnout gear, except for the boost, just because of the nature of the stairs. That's a little dangerous. But I tell you what, I got nothing but respect for folks that run toward danger so that the rest of us can bug out. And thank you for doing that.
Oh, I was in the right place in the wrong time, so to speak.
Now, you kind of remind me of my brother. He was ambulance driver, went into firefighting, and then went into Air Force Special Forces. So, yeah, there's clearly a trend line there for you guys that, you know, adrenaline junkie is not the right word. But tell me a little bit, because I've read some quotes from you, Jeff, about the difference between, you know, coming back to the warrior ethos, if you will, the difference between somebody who can, when you need to exert extreme violence, you can flip that switch on and off, versus the folks, I mean, your sociopath out there, the guys that are just bullies.
Yeah. And I think that's, I've probably stated it much more eloquently in my past, but I think I attribute that awareness of what I call, you know, flipping the switch, so to speak, to my mental maturity at the age I entered the service. I have a very interesting psychological perspective as far as like, wow, what would I have been like at 18 when I was physiologically, your frontal lobe hasn't matured enough to the point where you can't help but be indoctrinated. So I'm genuinely curious how my mind would have acted if I enlisted, you know, at 18 versus late 20s. And I think that's where that light switch kind of comes into play is, you know, like I think 99% of the time, anybody that meets me, I'm relatively jovial. I have my bad days, you know, I'll probably swear with my friends at having a bad morning or whatever like that. But 99% of the time, I'm kind of a jolly green giant. But I mean, there were times on deployments where I was like, let's be honest, I'm very glad my mother didn't have to see me certain times because I was right in what I'm doing. But it was a side, that switch, if you will, that I wouldn't want my own mother to see, nor my at the time wife, because it's just, it's the unfortunate side of war, combat, terrorism, whatever it is. And I think people that where that light switch becomes a dimmer, that's where we get issues psychologically where, you know, like a 20-year vet, I know some tons of 20-year Green Berets that I respect massively, but if you're indoctrinated or if you're saturated in that existence so long, that light switch, you've been turning it on and off so many times, it wears metaphorically. It's not as crisp as a flip. So it accidentally becomes a dimmer in a way. And I think I have a huge theory on military. You know, we're deployed and we come back, so we're kind of off. It's not like while I'm driving around Fort Carson, I have to walk around looking for terrorists. You know, I'm home and I can relax a little bit. But then if you look at like fire or police, you know, they have a 24-hour shift and they're back on the streets. I genuinely think they, I don't want to say have it harder, but they're on and off much more frequently. And as a result, their net being on throughout their life is much more intense. And so I can't fathom that life of doing that for 15, 20 years, especially in like a high crime city, that on off switch, you know, it barely exists, I imagine.
Well, yeah.
And that's where it becomes bullies. And that's where it becomes they're psychologically not adapt to handle it anymore. And then they can become bad cops or bullies or what have you, you know, unfortunately.
Well, and you, that's a very good point, Jeff, because that switch is being flipped on and off several times a day. And
yeah,
you just don't know when. I mean, when you're a Green Beret and Jeff Bosley's in Iraq, you know, you're in a challenging place and bad things might happen. But I mean, with a police officer, you don't know how, you know, just a traffic stop could turn into a shootout.
Life and death. Yeah. And I every police officer I've met, somebody kind of brought me to that awareness years ago, and it really hit me hard where I realized I'm not justifying the bad law enforcement officers out there. Every profession has, you know, some bad apples, but I'm not justifying it. But I'm like, wow, I can see if a fragile mind is around that and set, it's this bad recipe for, you know, non-success. And it's, you know, if you're here in East LA and that's where you're at every day, your shift, and, you know, yeah, it's unfathomable to me.
Yeah. Jeff, we're going to have to take another break here. Before we do, I'm going to leave you with a quote. When we come back, there's going to be a quiz, brother. When we come back, I want you to tell me who it is. And the quote is, "So many of us choose our path out of fear disguised as practicality. What we really want seems impossibly out of reach, so we never dare to ask the universe for it. I am the proof that you can ask the universe for it." Ladies and gentlemen, this is your host, Ben Bueller Garcia. We're joined by Jeff Bosley. When we come back, we're going to talk about his next switch in his tortured career path, becoming an actor. Stick around. Welcome back to American Warrior Radio, ladies and gentlemen. This is your host, Ben Bueller Garcia. We're joined on the phone by Jeff Bosley. Jeff is a very intriguing cat. I tell you what, he's one of those people where if you see his picture, he looks awfully scary, but we're learning through our chat with him here on American Warrior Radio. He's really a gentle giant. Jeff, before the break, I left you with a quiz, a little quote. The guy who said that, who is credited with that quote, wrote himself a check for $10 million. And on the memo line he wrote for acting services rendered, he gave himself 5 years to cash it in. Who are we talking about?
Mr. Jim Carrey.
Has that quote, and by the way, if folks don't know the story, a few weeks
before. Google that.
No, you didn't Googleize it. Okay. A few weeks before the deadline, he learned he actually would be making $10 million for the film Dumb and Dumber. So, Jeff, you, and I know, for an Army Green Beret medic, it's hard to imagine something that would be rough going, but
yeah.
In your case, I mean, we've seen, literally, my wife and I were watching the movie Vice three nights ago, and I saw it's like, that's Jeff. I can tell it's Jeff because, I mean, dude, you're 6'5".
Yeah,
but,
I don't blend.
What did Carrie's quote, do you look back on that for inspiration? Because you're pursuing the Hollywood track a little bit different than I understand most aspiring actors do.
Yeah. I mean, unquestionably, it speaks to me. I mean, and here's how – I don't even think I've ever really confessed this, and it's by no means a secret, but it affects me daily in that it's actually his initials, not because I love Jim Carrey so much. I mean, he's a great guy, but it's that quote spoke to me. That shortly after that quote, a friend of mine and various circumstances in less than 3 days happened where I said, okay, I'm moving to L.A. I'm doing it. And seeing that commencement speech that day that he gave that quote of, you know, I'm shortening it, but not living a life of fear disguised as practicality, I called it good and moved to L.A. And his initials are tattooed on my arm under – I have a tattoo that says Y, and then various initials of people that have influenced me of as to why I am where I am or why I continue to do what I do. And his initials are there because of that quote. And had I heard it before the Green Break, where it would have absolutely been applicable – but the reason it applied to me more, you know, especially the schooling of the Green Beret Medical School, it makes my college pre-med look like a joke. You know, I went to anatomy and physiology like 3 days a week for 50 minutes. You know, we did that for 8 hours a day, 5 days a week sometimes. And I just, it was unbelievable what I did. I don't know if I could do it again, but it applies more to this Hollywood shenanigans in that Green Beret world, when it comes down to the logistics, you know, everybody gets a paycheck. Firefighter world, same thing. Those were still, quote unquote, practical jobs. They came with the reassurance of health benefits for my family. They came with benefits of a salary. They came with some nice warm and fuzzies that help you kind of do your job without stressing about a lot of other stuff, unless you're just really poor with money and poor with your life choices. The whole Hollywood thing, as anybody assumes and knows or doesn't know, I've said it before, you can put 100% in and that doesn't equal direct and proportionate results out. I can put 100% in and get zero, and that's that. So that's the opposite of practical. This whole world is not practical.
Jeff, let's talk a little more about that, because I recently met an actor who was in a major, I mean major series, and he's working at Home Depot in the interim to pay the bills. And what I meant by you're doing this different in that you're not – we're not going to see Jeff Bosley waiting tables somewhere or at Home Depot. Not that there's anything wrong with those careers, but you, like a Green Beret, you're in 110%.
Yeah, and I think that's what I took away from the Green Beret and firefighter things is my spectrum of suck has greatly widened. So what I consider miserable and horrible and you know, not ideal is way more diluted than it used to be when I was 18. If I was 18 living the life I am now in LA, I'd probably be crying nightly with, you know, sucking on my thumb. Now I take that Green Beret mentality and I apply it to LA. And like you said, there's nothing wrong with, I would say 99.9% of my friends either are teachers, bartenders, personal trainers, what, or a combination of all the above. And I vowed to come to LA and only do one thing, and that was to act or pursue acting. I've had miscellaneous side jobs, don't get me wrong, just to grab some paychecks here and there, but I'm pretty sure I'm not exaggerating. I'm very, very sure I've not had a formal, you know, I-9-W-2 paycheck job, i.e. Home Depot, et cetera, since I moved to L.A. I've had just piecemeal jobs, and that was because I was all in. And it also created a lack of options. As cliche as it is,
right.
You know, failure is not an option,
but
it gave me no backups. It gave me no safety net. So I had to find ways to make it happen in a world where there is no guarantees, there is no practicality. And so don't get me wrong. It's I'm not a walking ball of sunshine and stress-free existence as a result. But I think I was speaking to some you offline, maybe as a result, I track my auditions and I've had more auditions and opportunities by 100 to 200 fold than some of my brethren that have been here 2 to 3 times longer than me. And that's because I live, eat, breathe this. and I'm awake for it. I'm available for it. And I don't have to call into a job or quit a job or create a bad reputation because I'm that guy that always calls in sick for auditions.
Well, what your strategy, Jeff, reminds me of another military figure in history who basically burned his ships when he arrived in the New World. And that that provides a little extra motivation. So you burned your ships when you arrived in Hollywood. Jeff, one of the things that we hear so often, particularly any military member, but particularly Special Forces folks, is what they miss when they go out in the civilian world is the camaraderie. Yes. And you're working as part of a team towards a common goal. In Hollywood, though, I'm guessing even though you've got buddies and other actors, and they may even be other veterans, is that camaraderie gone? Because you're fighting for the same gig.
Yeah, and it's a huge catch-22 because it's obviously how you handle it personally. I personally am extremely competitive, and it might not be healthy long-term, but if I go to audition, the hallway is full of clones of me. And to me, it's just growing up playing sports, that competition is my competition. It doesn't mean I want them to get hit by a bus or I wish them ill will, but I want to beat them. I want to win. So ironically, a lot of my friends won't probably audition for the same roles as me. That's just a coincidental accident. You're right. That camaraderie isn't there. It's not the same. Like there's a couple veteran things I do around the city. It's still within a city doesn't have an air of veteran existence like you would at a Fort Carson within Colorado Springs, et cetera. It's there, but I can dabble into it. Like once a week, there's a veteran thing that another Green Beret actually invited me to. And, it's like it's a sport event, or a workout thing that we do weekly for an hour. And it's got a veteran camaraderie, but it's once a week, but there's nothing like as a firefighter being on shift with your brothers and sisters for 24 hours and potentially like that one call, your lives are in each other's hands. There's nothing like being on an ODA, the Green Beret, team in Iraq or Afghanistan or wherever for, months and months at a time in firefights or whatever. There's nothing comparable to that here when you're out of the service in general. But then absolutely, without getting too, any remotely political, Los Angeles and Hollywood are on near the other polar end of the spectrum compared to serving as a Green Beret. I mean, that's anybody can say that pretty objectively. So
sure. So now, educate me here, Jeff, because I can't imagine there's that many 6'5", 250-pound, cut like granite guys out there auditioning for parts who have the added benefit of being able to do their own stunts, and know trigger discipline and know what looks real because you've been real. Are those guys just kicking around Hollywood on the corner?
No, and that's what you're saying is an exact safe assumption. There is, and I say all this very hesitantly without sounding very self-centered, but I'm pretty sure I'm one of a few. Because, when it comes to Hollywood, I try to really distinguish so people know. I look at the job. I love the job. Don't get me wrong. I love the art of it. I love performing. But at the end of the day, it's still a job. Like a race car driver talking about his race car, it doesn't mean he's self-centered talking about how his car performs. So I really try to discriminate how I talk about myself as an actor. And I don't want people to think, I know I'm tall. I know I'm 6.5 feet tall and I have blue eyes. That's like saying I know I have a fast car. I'm not patting myself on the back. I know logistically in the aesthetic of this business, I'm pretty rare. But the catch with that is that also means there's very rare roles for that thing. So when the role exists, I'm almost a shoo-in. But rarely does the role exist until you're leading man guy. And this is perfect. You brought up Vice. I actually had I had lines and a much bigger role. And that day on the set, I was way too tall when we were getting ready to shoot because it looks kind of cruddy to have me with and Mr. Chris. I was shooting scenes with Christian Bale, and he's an average size dude. I think he's maybe 6'1", so he's by no means a short guy. But the framing of that shot looks cruddy to get me in the same frame as him. There's a huge blank space above his head to get me in the shot, so they recast me on the spot. The same thing happened for me 2-3 weeks ago in Westworld. I was too tall, And I was supposed to have a scene with like Sir Anthony Hopkins, and they recast me on the spot. So they're like, oh, wow, he's too tall. So pretty much I have to jump from struggling, crawling my way up to getting the leading man role. So then everybody else has to work around me.
Yeah.
So it's catch 22. It's so unique and single that it's also bad.
So,
in a way.
I mean, do you have a contract, Jeff, or do you get paid the same when they sort of demote you right there on the set? Or does that mean less money?
Because they're all union jobs. I'm in the SAG after union. And you're there and it's like a flat rate. You're paid for an 8-hour day. And it's, you know, just like in the military, ironically, there's a whole lot of hurry up and wait. So you'll end up being there. Even when I got quote unquote demoted that night, I was there for the whole day. I still got fully paid and I just got to sit there, and I always bring work with me in my backpack. So I popped open my laptop and, you know, did some work and emails and whatnot. And I got paid the full day rate, you know, so they, you know, as far as like the paycheck, you still get paid. That's never those demotions, so to speak, don't hurt you so much as, you know, putting food on your table. But yeah, it's kind of stinks to try out for the team and make the cuts. And then on the day of the big game, they pull you out.
Sure. Sure. So. Folks, this is your host, Ben Bueller Garcia. We're talking with Jeff Bosley. Jeff is a former Green Beret medic. He's been a firefighter. He and his truck company were awarded the Medal of Valor for an accident in Colorado Springs. Now he's in Hollywood. When we come back, we're going to pick Jeff's brain a little bit more about what that's like and do some strong likes and dislikes when we come back. Stick around. Welcome back to American Warrior Radio, ladies and gentlemen. This is your host, Ben Bueller Garcia. We're joined by Jeff Bosley. You can learn more, visit Jeff Bosley, BOSLEY.com. Also, check out Patreon.com, patreon.com/Jeff Bosley. The Land of Boz podcast can be found there. Some good stuff. Jeff, one of the guests that we've had a couple of times on American Warrior Radio, just a terrific guy. Definitely a warrior himself, won several, I think 3 Purple Hearts in Vietnam as a Marine, Dale Dye. And he, you know, also he's definitely a Hollywood legend. He's been, you know, Band of Brothers, Saving Private Ryan. He's all over the place. But one of the things that Dale shared with us, what I found interesting, was not a fear of being typecast, because at the end of the day, a guy's got to work, right? A man or woman's got to work. Yeah. You got to earn that paycheck. Yeah. But he says, I want to do comedy. One of his favorite scenes was, and I don't think it ever made it to the big screen, where he was having a banana fight with a monkey in a cockpit or something just crazy like this. And it was wonderful. But it's Dale Dye. It's Colonel Sink. It's, you know, do you worry about that, or doesn't matter? You need to get paid.
I'm a little of both, because I'm aware I do pat myself on the back a little bit for being highly aware that this is an art, you know, the whole acting thing and performing, it is an art, you know, you evoke emotions, and you provide people some escape from whatever reality they want escape from for 90 minutes. So there's that side. But at the same time, I still do know for a fact it's a business. You know, so people that are making $1 million residual checks, they can make whatever decision they want that satisfies them and not have to worry about that paycheck to put food on their table. So there is that, how to navigate world of, you know, I got to work, but, you know, if I keep playing, here's a great example. If I keep playing bodyguard number 3, mm-hmm. I will play bodyguard number 3 for the rest of my career. If you do it like, you know, so much. And so there is that risk, because you do have to kind of have that come to Jesus of, what do I want out of my career? But you also want to work. I know until I can kind of become more of a draw where they'll cater to my offerings more, I do know what I am. Like you said, I'm a 6.5-foot tall dude with muscles and tattoos and blue eyes. Odds are I'm not going to play a frail heroin addicted professor at a college. You know, so why would I even audition for that? But I do know within my narrower lane, I can still, you know, I can still go from the, you know, shore to shore a little bit and bounce back and forth and hopefully get a lot of work. But like you said, Dale, the comedy is a perfect example. On paper, since you and I know who Dale is, I'm an unknown. You look on paper at Jeff, I have tons of acting training, tons of acting experience. And then you scroll down my resume a little bit more, and you're like, oh, this is, it almost sounds like I'm lying. Oftentimes people think I'm making it up, and I keep documents with me to prove that I'm not. They're like, okay, and he was a Green Beret. Okay, and he was a firefighter. Okay, and he was – and I'm like, yeah, I promise I'm these things. And then they're like, okay, but he can't possibly be funny. And I actually – I am. I've done, like, stand-up – or not stand-up, improv things. I did a play at a theater here recently where – bringing up Jim Carrey, and it was very much a Jim Carrey-esque character, and everyone that saw it said, we wouldn't have thought you could do that just looking at you, which is cool. It's a nice little pat on the back, but if I only went for Jim Carrey roles, I would never even get an audition because they would, just on paper, they'd look and go, that guy probably isn't funny because it is an industry.
You have taken a page out of Dale Dye's book, though, and I don't know, I mean, clearly you're still trying to get to that next level, but yeah. Was it pretty cool when someone sent you a photo of you 60 foot tall on a billboard in New York City?
Yeah, that was an unexpected surprise. I didn't even know it was happening. I mean, I got to play, basically I was playing a special forces guy in the Call of Duty game. And next thing you know, I was on Times Square with all my Fu Manchu creepy mustache glory. And, I didn't know it was happening. Yeah.
Your special skill is what? Attack dogs plus three or?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I have some crazy pit bull attack dog character that when we did all this shooting and all that, there was a guy off camera tugging on a leash, you know, so that was all I added digitally later. And yeah, it was just absurd. And actually another Green Beret that's actually hotelier, if you will. He's like, hey, I got some miles. Go, let me fly to New York and get in some pictures in front of that sucker. Well, and so.
I'm just a radio host, Jeff. I don't know anything, but, you know, there might, let me just throw this idea out there and see what you think and see what the Twitterverse thinks about this. What about you as, Jack Reacher, for example, would that work?
I mean, I would dabble with that theory. I mean, it's been thrown around a little bit. but yes, as you're jokingly hinting at, that is a classic example of the two movies that people, everybody knew about. Tom Cruise did them. And if you didn't know they were books, you just thought they were generically just two Tom Cruise movies. But if you knew they were based on now 22 plus books, you know, the character, no disrespect to Mr. Cruise. I respect him and his career, and I'd actually like to emulate a chunk of it. The character in the book is, let's just keep it simple, me. The guy's 6 foot six. He's 250 plus pounds, blue eyes, just a truck of a human. And the author's always written that as a plot point. It's not like a happenstance mentioning like, oh, he drove a white sedan, and then it's never mentioned again. His size is a constant plot point. So the fans... And I was a book fan in the Army. I read the book for the first time actually using a outdoor toilet in Iraq. I found one on the ground, and that's no exaggeration.
Might be too much information, Jeff, but thanks for sharing.
It's a great couch story for the late-night shows. He's like, where did I first read my first Jack Reacher book? And
What can we do? I mean, in my day job, I'm a lobbyist, so what can we do? And I don't know – corned beef hash from hashtags, but what can we do, Jeff, to I mean, let's light up Hollywood and make sure Jeff Bosley is the next Jack Reacher.
The biggest thing, and then here's the cool thing about the author, is the rights have gone back to him, and he's actually explicitly said, I've seen it come out of his mouth to my face, that he wants an unknown actor and a new face to fill the role of the giant character. So that's unprecedented in Hollywood. They normally want a known face and a known quantity and all that. So he's listening to the fans, literally and metaphorically. So his Twitter, his Facebook, his name's Lee Child. We've met twice. I've spoken at a panel with him. So without being pompous, he knows who I am. We've met. I'm actually meeting him again in July. So there's traction. And there is not corned beef hash, but hashtag Bosley. Bosley for Reacher is a trending hashtag. There's t-shirts and hats that company made. And it's just, there's a, on the, he's very, his, I don't know if he has handlers, so I can't speak if he's literally the one on the other end of the computer, but I know his world is active on his Facebook professional page and his Twitter page. And I mean, people can just go straight there and just type in hashtag Bosley for Reach, and that'd probably be enough.
Jeff, we'll do what we can. We're running out of time here, sir.
Yeah,
I tell you one thing I love. Several times that we've talked, you always say we rise together. So whatever we can do to help make you the next Jack Reacher, as long as you don't forget about us when you're a big star.
Flying everybody out to the premiere.
There we go. Real quick, about 30 seconds. When you have your Jim Carrey moment, when that $10 million check can be cashed, what are you going to do with it? What are your hot buns? Is it horses, animals, kids? Who do you want to help?
I'll honestly pay off my parents and my sister and her wife's debt. And then I will put it towards savings. And I love dog rescues and I love horse rescues. That's the short version.
That's a very short version. You've done good. Folks, check out jeffbosley.com, BOSLEY.com. And, you know, if you want to help him out before he becomes Jack Reacher, he's also got a Patreon page. That's for creative content creators. It's patreon.com/Jeff Bosley. Jeff, thanks so much for spending your time here with us today on American Warrior Radio.
Oh, it's my honor, sir. Thank you for having me. It means a lot.
Folks, this podcast and over 200 other interviews with heroes can be found at AmericanWarriorRadio.com. Check out our Facebook page, American Warrior Radio. Thanks again so much to Medicare Mentors for helping bring us to Colorado Springs. We look forward to spending our Sunday mornings with you good folks there as well. Until next time, folks, all policies and procedures are to remain in place. Take care.
You've been listening to American Warrior Radio. You can hear over 150 episodes of this program at AmericanWarriorRadio.com.